Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard another edition of Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend wherever you happen to be. Which, if I had to guess, you're either stuck at an airport or stuck at a mall. Or stuck on the way to the airport or stuck on the way out of the mall. Am I close? You know what? You get no sympathy from me, because you know what I say every year. Thanksgiving is an obligatory dysfunctional family get-together. Why did you even go home in the first place? Your uncle and aunt going to push all the buttons anyway. You overpaid for your ticket. You got hassled at the airport. And now you're stuck at a mall. But if you're really smart, you're listening to me, because I'm going to tell you how to get out of it all. In fact, give us a call. 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Last week we were in Jamaica. Before that we were in Bermuda. And if you want to listen to these shows, just sign on to become a travel insider on that website, petergreenberg.com. You'll get access to all of our radio archives. In fact, speaking of where we were last week, get out your maps, boys and girls. We're at 33 degrees, 49 minutes north, 116 degrees, 32 minutes west. We are coming to you from La Quinta Resort and Club in Palm Springs, California. And I almost said Palm Springs, Florida, which doesn't exist. What a time of the year to be here. This is a very cool time to be here, and a lot of history at this resort. It goes back a long time. If you know Hollywood, then you know you study the La Quinta Resort to find out what got written here, what got made here, and what careers got made here as well. We'll be talking about that a little bit later in the show. But, of course, what's first and foremost on everybody's mind, because it's topic A everywhere, is the TSA and the new scanning machines, the more invasive pat-down procedures. Very, very big controversy. People saying they're going to opt out and slow down the lines because they're going to insist on a pat-down. When, in fact, let's face it, boys and girls, we just want to get back home to grandma's. Even if it is a dysfunctional grandma, but bottom line is, it is topic A. Let's do some numbers here first. The original plan called for 2,200 airport security locations at 450 airports to house all those new scanning machines. And we know why there are scanning machines, because it goes back to last December 25th on the famous underwear bomber, who was able to get through two security checkpoints, one in Africa, one in Amsterdam, without ever being discovered, that he was actually carrying essentially the ingredients inside his pants that he then assembled to try to make the bomb that he tried to detonate as the plane was nearing Detroit. So we understand the reason for it. In fact, polling data would suggest that an overwhelming number of us support better security. Who's not going to support that? Here's where the problem is. The application of that security, the methodology of that security, the process of that security, the privacy issues, the health and radiation issues, and, of course, the time issues that are raised. And joining me right now, someone who knows a little bit about that, who's at the forefront of this issue, and I think he has a little bit to say about it, our good friend Roger Dow, the president and CEO of the U.S. Travel Association. Hey, Roger.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
Well, I'm not being scanned or patted down, so I guess I'm doing okay.
That's terrific. You're in a wonderful place, one of my favorite resorts.
Isn't it great? Well, I know you're a big golfer, so you love this place.
Well, I've looked a few golf balls there myself.
Well, listen, before we start whacking golf balls around, let's whack this issue around a little bit. I mean, I'm one of those people who thinks in another 3 months it'll be a non-issue, but they do have a public relations disaster on their hands at the TSA.
Yeah, it's really become quite a problem, and the uproar from the travelers and non-travelers is phenomenal, and I do think the proposed slowdowns tomorrow are just going to cause more chaos and more problems.
Well, then what's the solution here? Because, I mean, everybody from President Obama to even Hillary Clinton, I mean, she actually went on record and said, I wouldn't want to go through a pat-down. And when you have the Secretary of State saying that, and of course, by the way, she doesn't have to go through a pat-down as long as she's Secretary of State. The famous quote that I love was from Colin Powell on the day after he was Secretary of State. He had to fly from Washington to New York on the shuttle, and that was the first time in his career he had to go through the TSA, and he didn't like it at all.
No, he didn't. In fact, as he was being patted down that day, he told me, the agent said, "How are you, General Powell?" He said, "Well, you know I'm General Powell. Why aren't you looking for Osama bin Laden?" Which points out the problem here. I think whether it's a body image scanner or pat-downs or whatever, it's more of a symptom of the problem. That's, we don't have a long-term vision for what security ought to be, how we ought to go about it.
The real problem is that we know the reason, but we're fighting the last war. I'm convinced that if the underwear bomber had stood up on the plane and sang "Mary Had a Little Lamb," that the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security would make a new rule that nursery rhymes would be forbidden from flights. And that's not the issue. The issue is trying to figure out how do we make a sterile environment safer for everybody without compromising our individual rights. And that's a tough thing to do in a democracy.
Well, you're exactly right. And it's always going back after last month's or last year's problem, just as you stated. And the LA Times had an editorial that said it so best, that you want to find a needle in the haystack, make the haystack smaller. And what we've got to do, if you've got to find trusted travelers like yourself, myself, people like this, and get the data from them and move them through the system without, you know, Gerard Arpey is not going to blow up an American Airlines plane. So why the hell would we scan him?
Exactly. And then again, there are the stupid questions that they ask you when you're flying back to the United States that American Airlines and the TSA and the DHS ask these governments to do. And they're the same stupid three questions that anybody, even if English isn't their first language, can figure out the answers. It's always yes, yes, and no. Did you pack the bag yourself? Have they been with you all the time? And did anybody give you something to bring back for you? Well, you know, even if you don't even speak English, you can memorize yes, yes, and no, and they just let you through.
Precisely, and I think we've got to, you know, everyone talks about this issue called profiling, and I think we have to profile, but not as people think of profiling, not by race or by what you look like, but how you act. Have you flown 30,000 miles in the past couple of years? Who hasn't flown? Who's a brand new flyer that's going somewhere, Alaska, without a coat? These kinds of things, and profile behavior and activities, and you can really take that stack up smaller.
And, you know, part of the profiling is basically learning how to ask questions that can't be answered by a yes or no answer. You know, if I think you murdered somebody, Roger, I'm not going to say, did you murder somebody? You're going to say no. I'm going to say, hey, Roger, what did you do with the gun? Now, if you answer that question, which can't be answered by yes or no, then we have something to talk about. And it doesn't take that long to ask that question. We shouldn't be moronically asking the stupid same three questions that can be answered by yes, yes, and no. Bottom line is, Roger, I hope you're not stuck at the mall. I hope you're not stuck at the airport. I hope you're stuck at a golf course right now, and I wish you a happy Thanksgiving vacation.
And you have a great one, too, and safe and happy traveling to everybody.
You got it, Roger. That's Roger Dow, the CEO of the United States Travel Association, staying on top of this issue for us. And when we come back, there's another issue. You better believe it. You think it's tough getting through the airports? How about getting to your wallet to pay for your tickets? The airfares are way up this year, and the airlines are having a ball. Are you? Back with more Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the La Quinta Resort in Palm Springs, California, right after this message.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 18 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com. And, of course, at this time during Thanksgiving, we want to give thanks to all those people doing all the essential hard work in Haiti, in western China, in Chile. Remember, they had an earthquake, too. And of course, in the Gulf. A lot of work to be done there. That work doesn't end. In fact, because of the cholera outbreak in Haiti, it's getting even worse. They need your help. please go to our website, petergreenberg.com, for a comprehensive list of all the aid and relief organizations doing all that hard work down there. Even as you're enjoying your turkey dinners, they're down there working. They need your help, not just your donations. You might be surprised at how you can get physically, actively, and personally on location involved down there. So check out our website for that information. As I said before the break, it's been a wild year for the airlines. After 10 years of losing about $50 billion, 2010 has been their year to play catch-up at our expense. And, of course, we don't deny any airline the opportunity to make a profit, but the nickel and diming is getting a little out of control. The rules and regulations are getting a little bit out of control. Their results are great because they've cut the capacity, they're filling every plane, and the airfares are going through the roof. And believe it or not, I'm in La Quinta here. The nearest airport is Palm Springs. I am not making this figure up, ladies and gentlemen. A one-way fare from Palm Springs to Los Angeles today, a flight that actually in airtime is 26 minutes on a plane flown by Captain Skippy, because it's a little baby plane, a United Airlines fare, are you sitting? I'm not making this up, $836. Okay? They ought to sell me the plane. It's wild. Joining me now, somebody who knows about airfares, because he updates them about 600 million times a day. I know I'm exaggerating, but not by much. Our good friend from airfarewatchdog.com, George Hoboka. Hey, George.
Hi, Peter.
So were you surprised at that figure, $830 for a one-way ticket?
Well, for that price, you could hire a limo to drive you in air-conditioned private comfort, no?
Well, a limo with wings, I hope. But, I mean, that gives you an idea of where we're at right now. And it's not just holiday airfares. They've been creeping upwards for a while.
Absolutely. And especially some of these one-way fares. What they've done is they've put more restrictions on Saturday night stay, or you have to stay two nights or three nights. So the people who are really getting screwed are like business travelers or people who are going one way or people who are going and not staying over Saturday night. Like if you do a same-day round trip between Cincinnati and Detroit or Minneapolis and Detroit or any of the hubs now and you don't stay over Saturday night, you are going to pay about $800 or $900 on some routes.
I know. And do you see an end in sight for this or no?
No, I think it's probably going to get worse. I think that probably going to see some more consolidation after AirTran and Southwest, consolidate. And what's going to happen to the U.S. Airways? Is U.S. Airways going to merge with American? I think the airlines have finally gotten religion, and they're sick of losing money. If they continue to lose money, then we would have fewer airlines anyway because they'd just go out of business.
Yeah, I know. But here's the other thing. You know, it's not just the airlines. It's the alliances, meaning I have this prediction that within 3 years we won't be flying American or British or Qantas or Iberia. We'll be flying the One World airline.
Well, you see the planes with the Star Alliance logo, and it's what's Star Alliance? I saw this once at an airline. Oh, is that a new airline, Star Alliance Airlines? Because they had no other logo. It just said Star Alliance. And I think you're right. Maybe a certain number of years we're going to see just the alliances, and maybe that's the way the world is going. Maybe the governments will permit more than 49% ownership of foreign airlines, and we'll see these alliances, like four or five major global airlines. There are people in the industry besides yourself who think that this is the way the world is going.
No, but that brings up another bad talking point, especially at this time of the year, because at this time of the year, something else happens out there, George, and you know what it is. It's called the mileage runs. All these fanatical frequent flyers who are short of getting their next higher tier status at the airlines, or maybe 4,000 miles short, who will literally fly to Australia on a coach ticket and turn around the next day just to get enough miles to get to that next level.
I think they're crazy, but maybe they're not. I mean, you do get special perks when you achieve status. And if some people just like to fly. I'm not one of them. I shouldn't admit that, but I'm not. But there are some great mileage. Every day we see a mileage run fare. We have a fare of the day every day, and it's a perfect mileage run. Boston to San Diego, 142 with tax. Charlotte to Phoenix for 118 with tax. So every day there is a good mileage run fare, and I know people who do it. They just love to get that status.
I know, but the thing is, okay, now you get the status, right? And now you have all these miles in your account. Good luck redeeming them.
They are hard to spend on some airlines, absolutely. I was looking to go to London on British Airways using miles. I have a lot of miles because I got that Chase Visa card, and I got 100,000 bonus miles just for getting the card, and it's pretty hard to use. On Virgin, however, it's actually much easier. Virgin Atlantic, So it really depends on the airline. Also, the taxes on the British Airways so-called free ticket are something like $500, whereas on Virgin, for some unknown reason, maybe you know the answer, they're much less.
Yeah, because the reason why they're much less is because the British taxes are calculated at where British Airways is based in Britain.
Okay. That'll they have the co-pays, $50 to upgrade a domestic ticket each way on United, up to $700 to upgrade a ticket from economy class to business class on international flights. So it doesn't make any sense in some scenarios to actually spend your miles, assuming you can find a seat.
You know what I think now? I've come up with this conclusion, and tell me if you agree with this, George. I believe the airlines have turned the frequent flyer programs into bad HMOs. Everything's a copay.
Yes, absolutely. It's like going to the doctor or the dentist. It is like pulling teeth trying to get those seats. Especially, you have to spend, twice the number of miles because the low-value frequent flyer seats are not available, 25,000.
But they're never available, and yet they're the inducement for you to join the program.
That's right. They're giving away too many miles.
See, that's the fraud of the frequent flyer program, and it just gets me crazy because you think about it, and you go, the ads for every one of those programs is at 25,000 miles, you're going to be on a beach with a pina colada stuck up your nose, and then you get to the 25,000 miles, and they go, oh, sorry, Mr. Hovica, sorry, Mr. Greenberg, we don't have the 25,000-mile award available. We have one at 50 or one at 60. And you sit there going, well, okay.
Yeah, there's absolutely no choice. And they really do give away miles like candy. Now that we're in the holiday season, by the way, I want to remind people, if you want to collect miles, do not buy anything online without first going to the airline shopping malls. Nordstrom, for example, is giving 12 miles per dollar spent on some of the airlines like British Airways. Now, whether you can spend the miles or not, but you spend $500 and you get 6,000 miles. And that's just another way they're giving away too many miles that are hard to spend.
Well, it doesn't really matter how many miles they give away if they control the redemption and don't let you cash them in.
Yeah.
They become it's like bad loan sharking.
It's inflation. It's inflationary.
I know. Amazing. We're going to be doing a piece coming up on CBS where we're actually going to give you the actual dollar figure of what you actually spent, assuming they will redeem those miles, for the ticket that's supposedly a free ticket, and it's a staggering number.
And you have to include, if you earned those miles with a frequent flyer credit card, you might have paid $80 a year for that. And then
plus the interest?
Yeah, and the co-pays.
But you know the one that drives me the most nuts, I laugh so hard about it? I think it might be United. For 8,500 miles, instead of redeeming it for a ticket, which you can't do for 8,500 miles, you can redeem it for, a 32-ounce box of Godiva chocolates.
Or a magazine subscription.
Okay, but we did the math. If 54% of all mileage is earned on the ground, and you get 1 mile per dollar spent, that means you take 54% of 8,500, and you just spent about $5,000 for a box of chocolates.
That's a terrible way to spend miles. I spend miles upgrading to business class. I'll take, on United, you can sometimes get the absolute cheapest fare, maybe, $200 round trip, one way between New York and Los Angeles. And then I spend 15,000 miles plus $50 to get what really would have cost me maybe $2,400 if I had bought it. So I think that's a good way to spend the miles. And it's usually okay usually capable of getting an upgradable seat. As long as you want to go at an inconvenient time, like 6:30 in the morning or red eye.
And by the way, the magazine subscriptions aren't any better. You want to spend $4,200 for a subscription to Reader's Digest? Cash in those miles.
Oh, that is the worst way to spend miles. You're doing a great public service to warn people never get a magazine subscription using your miles.
That's right. And by the way, here's what you can do. Redeem no miles and just log on to our website, petergreenberg.com. Our newsletter is free every 12 hours. How about that? How about that for a self-serving pleasure?
And you can also donate your miles to a worthy cause if you're not planning to go anywhere.
You can, as long as the cause can redeem the miles. It's the fraud doesn't stop there. I call it, that's the problem. George Hoboken from airfarewatchdog.com. That's a great website as well. We'll be back with more from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after these messages. And that'll be 15,000 miles, please.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter at petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. As I said earlier in the show, this is a legendary hotel. And when you say legendary hotel, that means it's got great history. If you want to know the history of Hollywood, movie making, the circus, cowboys, westerns, I mean, you don't have to look far once you come down here. It's all around you. And joining me right now is the manager of the La Quinta Museum, Joanna Wickman. Hey, Joanna.
Hi.
So did I get that right on the money there, more or less?
Pretty much. Yeah, we're a very unique museum. We have one gallery that's exclusively local history. So you'll find exhibits on the La Quinta Hotel and the La Quinta Desert Club. And then our other two galleries are exhibits that continually change. So sometimes it's local history, and sometimes it's something completely different, like right now P.T. Barnum and the circus.
Cool. And when you think about it, there's the railroad, there are migrant farm workers, there's a history of all that here in this area.
Right, and also the Kuia as well.
The Indians.
Yes.
Cool. But let's talk first. I got to go first to Hollywood. Got to go first. Because so much stuff happened here.
Yes, yes. There's so many connections. As far as the La Quinta Hotel, there were a number of movie stars who were regulars here. Of course, Greta Garbo. There's even stories that Mae West used to actually hold seances here with Amelia Earhart. And then, of course, probably the most famous guest and also resident would be Frank Capra.
You know, it's interesting because I had a chance to hang out in his suite. And what's in that suite? Obviously pictures of him, but that's the suite where he wrote what?
He actually wrote It Happened One Night here at the hotel, and that's what really, I think, connected him to the hotel so much, because when that film came out, it was incredibly popular and actually won an Oscar Grand Slam, which is 5 Academy Awards. And after that, he considered the La Quinta Hotel to be his Shangri-La for script writing.
Well, his lucky charm.
Exactly. And so he came back many years to write other films like You Can't Take It With You, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He actually even lived here for a number of years.
Amazing. Amazing. And later on the show, we'll be joined by one of the Cappers, so that'd be very cool.
That's a treat.
It is a treat. I know him because he was actually on the show a couple years ago when we did the Palm Springs Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
And great guy. But when you have that kind of story here, I mean, first of all, you're surrounded by photographs of the stars at play.
Right.
Right? Go ahead, keep going.
As I say, we actually, unfortunately, don't have too many photographs. You know, a lot of the movie stars came to Palm Springs
to hide out.
To hide out, exactly.
Well, Greta Garbo, come on.
Yeah, she wanted to be alone.
Yes.
You know, but the La Quinta Hotel, even more so, and even the Desert Club, we do have a few photographs. We have 2 photographs of movie stars at the Desert Club, and that's it. We have Kirk Douglas and Rita Hayworth, and that's it.
Wow.
No more photographs. And we have a couple photographs. We have Shirley Temple at the La Quinta Hotel, and we have Ginger Rogers at the La Quinta Hotel as far as photographs. But a lot of the stars really just, they came here to get away from everything. And unfortunately for historians, they succeeded, and there's not that many not that many photographs of them here.
But not so when it comes to the railroad, the circus, and the whole history of the development of this region.
Right, right. There's a lot of records, and, you know, that's one of the fun things about my job is that we get to sift through all of these records and kind of put together a story.
All right,
you know,
so what's been the biggest surprise for you and the biggest discovery that you said, no, that couldn't have happened here, but it did?
You know, I have to go back to my pet project, which is the La Quinta Desert Club. This was a place that it doesn't even exist anymore. Where it was is now a park, so you wouldn't even know it had been there. And when I first started here about a year and a half ago, we didn't know anything about it. And through some research, I actually came across a menu. There's a lady that owned it, lives in Indio, loaned it to us, that was signed by Robert Mitchum, Kirk Douglas, Gary Cooper, Piper Laurie, Virginia Mayo, on and on, all these different movie stars that went to the Desert Club that we had no idea they ever even came here. And we had no way to prove it. There were no photographs. We only have 2 photographs of the inside of the building. That's it.
Well, you know, historically, honestly, if you do the history of Hollywood, you'll find that in this area, La Quinta and Palm Springs, this is where the stars really went to, like, go in the bunker, literally,
right,
to hide. This is where nobody could touch them.
Right, absolutely.
So they could play freely.
And they did.
Aha. Now, what about the circus?
Well, the circus is actually, I mentioned earlier we have exhibits that change. And one of the neat things about our museum is that we get to do exhibits on things that have absolutely nothing to do with local history. And sometimes it's kind of fun to do different things. And so that's P.T. Barnum and the circus. But there are a couple local connections. We did set aside a part of the exhibit to focus on Hollywood and the circus, and we picked four movie stars, Cary Grant, W.C. Fields, Tom Mix, and Burt Lancaster, who all got their starts in the circus. And Tom Mix actually used to own a home up in the Cove area of La Quinta.
And that, so there's your connection right there.
There's our connection right there. You can't get away from it.
How often is the museum open?
The museum's open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 4.
Any admission fee?
No, absolutely free.
Oh, we love that.
Yes.
Cool. So if I find a menu somewhere, I can kind of sneak it in and make believe I was here too?
There you go. Just
and then
sign
you can,
it.
And then you could discover it.
And then just sign it, yes.
Cool. All right. I love the idea that it's free.
Yeah, so do we. It's a great asset for the city of La Quinta.
And a website?
Yes, you can go to www.laquinta.org, and the museum's page is right there.
We love it. Joanna Whitman, the manager of the La Quinta Museum, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
I love it. You know, it's interesting. Every time you come to a place, at least, guys, please listen to me, visit at least one museum for half a day, you will thank yourself. You don't have to spend the night at the museum. You don't have to be Ben Stiller, but you can have fun, okay? When we come back, we're going to get to a whole new definition of Eco Lodge. It's misused, but not when we come back. Right back from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
It's 43 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg here from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER on this Thanksgiving weekend. Hope you're having a great time, not stuck in traffic. And if you're going to watch a football game, go Badgers. I have to say that. That's my team. They could actually go 10-1. They could actually go 10-1. Could go to the Rose Bowl, which would be pretty amazing. When I went to the University of Wisconsin, we were like 0-12. And we still fill the stadium every week just to see what kind of inventive way we'd come up to fumble the ball. But we wouldn't win. This year, we're doing pretty good. Anyway, let's move on. As I told you about, a lot of words out there in the travel business that get either misused or overused. Sustainable is one. Ecotourism is another. And, of course, a little ancillary part of that, of course, is eco-lodges. My next guest knows a lot about that. He's the author of a great book published by HarperCollins. It's out there now called Authentic Eco-Lodges. So now we're really getting down to a definition of terms. And his name, Hitesh Mehta. Hey, Hitesh.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. This is a really good book because it finally, you know, gets down to finesse. It finally gets down to fine-tuning as to what really makes an eco-lodge. And I'm going to put you on the spot, and I'm going to ask you to tell me what is an eco-lodge.
An eco-lodge, Peter, is a guest accommodation that is harmoniously set in its natural and cultural surroundings and offers lodging and memorable learning experiences in remote parts of the world, while protecting the environment and benefiting the local community. So it's a very holistic concept.
And, of course, it's almost like a circle, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing has to benefit another, which has to benefit another. It just can't just be one-dimensional.
Correct, yes. It's like the total, like this, just like the circle of life.
All right, so eco-lodges, you know, most people have a definition of a true eco-lodge is you can only get there if you're wearing Birkenstocks, a backpack, and you're spending $7 a night, and you have the word hostel written all over you.
In the early 90s, it's very interesting. That's what people looked at as eco-lodges, as places where you sleep on the floor and, you share your toilets and things like that. But that has changed a lot, especially with the advent of new technologies, in terms of solar powers and organic cottons and new materials and everything. And so now you can look at eco-lodges, as you've seen in the book, and they look like you could be in a Ritz-Carlton or a Four Seasons or something.
And it's not always price driven. I mean, you do have some eco lodges there for $15 a night, and they go up to $500 a night.
That is correct. Yes, they all range from different parts of the world too. And so, it really is for backpackers as well as the,
as well as for the ritzy people who'd like to think they have a backpack in their possession.
Exactly. Right.
I mean, let's call it what it is. Right.
Birkenstocks. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, when you compiled all the information for this book, were there some eco lodges that were promoting themselves as eco lodges, that you looked at and you said, I'm not putting these guys in the book because they're really not?
That is very correct. We call that greenwashing in the industry. One of the reasons why I did this book was actually to raise the bar in the industry and then separate the ones that are really making a true difference from the others that are just calling themselves what they are not. So I actually started looking at almost 54 different properties, boiled it down to 44, and then eventually just came down to 40 that met the criteria system.
And that's really, that's what it is. I mean, just 40. That's wild.
Yes.
Now, what surprising locations did you find? Because, you know, when you think of eco lodges, you're thinking of Costa Rica, you're thinking of rainforest,
yes.
You're thinking of, Patagonia. Is there one like in New Jersey?
No. By its definition, ecolodges are places, accommodations within the whole ecotourism framework. So ecotourism only takes place in nature. So you can only find ecolodges in places like, you know, Yellowstone or Yosemite or Smoky Mountains or Everglades, but not in downtown Manhattan or downtown
Madison
or whatever, you know.
I didn't say downtown New Jersey. New Jersey's got a lot of green space. I thought maybe there might be one there.
Yes, it can be, yes, in natural areas. And, you know, where if they are helping towards protecting some of the ecosystems in New Jersey, or they're helping, you know, local communities are benefiting from it, yes, definitely.
Okay, see, there's hope for New Jersey. You see, that's the whole point of this book, that you could be the model for them to actually do a great eco lodge in, not Newark, but maybe somewhere else in New Jersey.
Correct, yes.
All right, the name of the book again, and it's perfectly named because it's what it is, Authentic Eco Lodges, 40 of the Really Cool Places Around the World That Really Fit the Definition. The author, Hitesh Mehta, the publisher, HarperCollins. Hitesh, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate that.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You got it. We'll be back with more from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after these messages.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg here with you, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California on this Thanksgiving weekend, where I hope you're having a great time, not in the mall, not at the airport, and not being patted down. Let's go to the emails here. We got one from Don in Hoboken, New Jersey, saying, I'm planning to go to Shanghai and Beijing in June of next year. I'm looking for a nonstop flight from Newark to Shanghai and return to Newark nonstop from Beijing. Guess what, Don? That ain't going to happen. You've got nonstop flights from Newark to Hong Kong on Continental. And if you want, there's new service to Shanghai on American, but I believe it goes through Chicago. And you know what? Not a bad deal. Right now, I do not know of any Newark to Shanghai nonstops. But the cool thing about going Newark to Hong Kong on Continental is that you get the chance to hang out in Hong Kong either on the way there or on the way back. And remember, the flight from Hong Kong to Shanghai, maybe 40 minutes, not a big deal at all. Now, of course, I couldn't get through the year without addressing a subject we've tried to avoid, actually, for quite some time. But you know what? It's been front page so long, we got to get to it. And, of course, it's on the Thanksgiving weekend that we talk about what? Bed bugs. All right, everybody has to talk about it. Everybody's worried about it. So joining us now, we have to have a pest control expert on the show. It's Thanksgiving, right? It's Brian Hirsch. Hey, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
All right, now, I have to ask the stupid question. It's sort of like sex. You know, is more sex happening now, or is it just being reported more?
No, unfortunately, more is just happening now. The increase has become so pervasive in the last few years that even small-town middle America is getting hit with them.
Really? All right, so now we know one thing I know about bed bugs, because I'm a traveler. Guess what? They're travelers, right? They love to travel.
Oh, absolutely. They are hitchhikers by nature. In fact, the only way to get them is to actually have the unfortunate luck of just going somewhere that has them, like a hotel room.
All right, but it's not just hotel rooms. We've seen stories where major retail stores in Manhattan have had to close because of bed bugs. We've seen movie theater problems because of bed bugs. So it's not just hotels, is it?
No, well, because you have to remember, people go to hotels, and once you go and visit a city, you go home, you live your life, but you bring them back to your house, and you put on your clothes and your boots and your winter coat, and then you go to the stores, and you go to the movie theaters, and unfortunately, they're clinging right to you, and so when you shed your clothes in the store to try on a new outfit, oops, you just left them in the dressing room for someone else to pick up. So you really have to be quite unlucky, but it does happen.
But there's no such thing, I mean, unless you're going to correct me on this one, I don't think there's not a machine that I can carry with me as a bed bug detector. I can't walk around waving some kind of magic wand.
No, unfortunately, you really can't. I mean, the only thing you can do is try to be as vigilant as you can. Watch where you put your belongings. Watch what you rub up against. You know, be wary of going to public places or, like, say, movie theaters. If you wear a winter coat out there, when you come home, toss it in the dryer for half an hour. At that heat, it'll kill any life stage. It's just trying to be aware of what you're doing and what you're touching so you don't bring things home with you.
So basically, the dryer's going to take care of that, huh?
Honestly, the dryer is the single best thing you have in your house. At 30 minutes on high heat, it'll kill every life stage of bed bugs. And be creative. I've thrown everything in dryers, from backpacks to shoes to clothes to quilts to baseball hats and kids' toys. A lot of stuff you can heat up for half an hour and be just fine, and then have it be bed bug free.
Now, the other thing, of course, is because they're travelers, they love luggage. And what's the one thing we all do, and I'm guilty of this too, I have to admit it, you come into a hotel room, and normally I don't use a bellman, I take my own bags with me, so when I get in the room, what's the first thing I do? I put the bag where? On the bed.
Oh, exactly. No, we've all used to do it. And to be quite honest, the second place where people put their luggage, which is actually almost the second worst spot in the hotel room, is right on that luggage rack they leave folded up in the wall. Because before you, 30 other people were using that same thing. What we typically like to see people do is, and what I do personally, is when I get to a hotel room, I take the luggage, I stick it in the bathroom on the tile floor, and I conduct a little bit of an inspection just to see if I can find any signs of bed bugs and maybe assuage any fears that I might have.
So if you walk in the bathroom and the bed bugs are using the conditioner and the shampoo, you know something's going on.
Well, those are the high-class bed bugs. It's only at the good places.
Hey, I'm going to give you a statistic. According to the National Pest Management Association, they say the bed bug problem in the United States has grown by a whopping 71% in the last 9 years?
That's absolutely true. Now, you have to understand that that statistic can be a bit skewed in the sense that up until just about 5 years ago, we really didn't have a really pervasive problem. But a worse part is in the last 5 years, it's just grown so quickly that it's moved from, you know, those big locales, the New Yorks, the Vegases, to Cincinnati. Cincinnati is not a traditional tourist destination, and it's probably number 3 or 5 on most bed bug registries as the worst place in the country.
Okay, Cincinnati weighs in at number 3. What's number 1?
New York is still probably holding on to that title pretty tightly.
Love that. Okay, who's got the lowest rating?
Probably a little farm in the middle of nowhere. Because the fact is that
Fairbanks, Alaska.
You know, actually, Alaska's pretty high up there on the list because they get a lot of tourists. They get a lot of stopovers from Carnival or from cruise lines and whatnot. Anytime you have a lot of people moving in and out of an area, particularly mixing in international travel, that's a chance of getting bed bugs is going to skyrocket.
Well, do what I do. When you get to a hotel, lift up the bedspread, lift up the mattress between the mattress and the box spring. If you see little streaks of blood and stuff like that, chances are you got visitors. Brian Hirsch, thank you, man, for setting us straight on bed bugs.
Thank you.
You got it, man, on this wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. All right, run into the bathroom, see if they're playing cards in there. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your weekend. For those stations sticking around, we've got a whole lot more coming from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. We'll be back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide right after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist. Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
And welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend wherever you happen to be. I hope you're not at the mall. I hope you're not stuck at the airport. Or maybe there'll be a double whammy. You're stuck at a mall at an airport. That's even worse. Anyway, I hope you're out there having a great time. And we are, too. Guess where we're coming from? Get out your maps, boys and girls. 33 degrees, 49 minutes north, 116 degrees, 32 minutes west. We were in Jamaica before. We were in Bermuda before that. Not any longer. We are West Coast time. We are in La Quinta Resort and Club in La Quinta, California. Taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem, and we will solve it right here on the air. Lots to get to today, and a lot of emails have come in, so let's go to a couple of those right now. We got one from Gail. I am not very well traveled, but I'm extremely interested in animals and birds and want to be fairly warm and have 2 weeks in late December, early January. Where's a good starting point? Well, your email is coming from Alaska. And I'll tell you where you want to go. You want to go down to Mexico because that's where they have the monarch butterflies. It happens basically in between December and about the first week in February. It's perfectly timed. I would suggest you do that. And there's another place you can go, and most people don't realize this, but I hesitate telling you this because I know I'm going to cause trouble for some people. It would cause trouble for me for reasons you'll understand immediately when I tell you. And that is, if you go to many major destinations, and that ranges from New York City to even Aspen, Colorado, the local animal shelters there, while you're there, will actually loan you a dog during your stay. Now, you know why they're loaning you the dog, because after about 15 minutes, you love the dog, and you then take the dog home. How cool is that? That's why I don't do that, because I would end up taking home five of them. I'm the biggest sucker for rescuing dogs, and a big shout-out to my sister who does the same thing. But definitely check out the monarch butterflies in Mexico, and if you look at the map, you'll find out it's nowhere near any of the troubled border towns. You're not going to have a problem whatsoever. Here's one from Dawn in Muskegon, Michigan. With us being AARP members, is getting a discount on passports available? Also, if flying into Punta Cana or Jamaica, can you use a passport card, or do you need a regular passport? Well, the first thing is, I know all my friends at AARP love getting discounts on everything from Howard Johnson's to dental care, but the last time I looked, the United States State Department doesn't discount passports. It is what it is, and those fees are going to be going up. So get them soon. It's still the best investment you can make because they're 10-year passports. It works out to be about $12 to $13 a year for your freedom to travel around the world. And I'm not a big fan of passport cards. That just doesn't make any sense to me if you really want to have options to see the world. A passport is your option to see the world, and you should use it. A passport card will get you to Jamaica, and it might get you to the Dominican Republic, and it'll certainly get you to Mexico and Canada. But you know what? There are 192 other countries out there that are just as valuable, if not more. And trust me on this, the passport gets you there. Please get a regular passport. And this is the time of year to do it, for the simple reason that they're not long lines with the crush for the summer. Get it now, okay? Here's one from Tim in Amsterdam, New York. How safe would it be? Oh, here's another Dominican Republic question. How safe would it be a vacation in the Dominican Republic considering the diseases now being seen in Haiti? Apples and oranges, my friend. No problem whatsoever in the Dominican Republic. Their water supply has not been hit, and neither has their food supply. You'll have no trouble whatsoever. But if you do go to the Dominican Republic, why don't you do something smart and go to my website, which is petergreenberg.com, and look at all the aid and relief organizations doing really good, wonderful, essential work in Haiti, and take a day or two off and go across the border and help out. Wouldn't that be cool? And you'll have a great vacation, and you'll be giving back to others. And isn't that what it's really all about? Speaking of that, go to our website for that list. It's a great comprehensive site that'll give you the list of all the aid and relief organizations. And we're talking not just about the Red Cross. We're even listing the ASPCA because of all the displaced animals down there. Back to animals again. I can't help myself. And this week we've got the AAA predictions on how bad the holiday traffic's going to be, since you're probably listening to this in your car and you got lots of time on your hands, so you can use a little internet card and find out about that. And for those of you who plan to fly or about to go home over the weekend, good luck. If you thought Wednesday was bad, Sunday's just as bad. Remember, they made a movie called Planes, Trains, and Automobiles celebrating you on this weekend. We've got my CBS report on the full-body scanners and the new invasive pat-downs at the airports this holiday season, what you need to know and what you should do. And let me tell you this. If there was ever a time for you to be contrarian travelers, this is the weekend to do it. Remember, I haven't believed an airport sign since I was 5 years old. They haven't told the truth since 1947 anyway, which, by the way, predates my birth. For those of you who are trying to figure out how old I am, I'm not going to tell you. But bottom line is, I never leave from the departures area, and I never arrive at the arrivals area. I get to the airport early to the arrivals area because there's no traffic there. Everybody else is stuck in traffic at departures. I've already FedExed my bags 3 days ahead of time, and I printed up my boarding pass the night before. And because of the new pat-down situation and the scanning machines, I have packed everything that I normally would carry in my pocket or in my wallet in my carry-on bag. My belt is in my carry-on bag as well. So guess what? I save 5 to 7 minutes in traffic just by going to the arrivals section where there's nobody arriving early in the morning. I take the escalator upstairs, go through security. I'm not stuck in line because I have to empty my pockets, or the person in front of me hopefully is listening to the show and is not emptying his or her pockets either. I get to my gate, and then when I arrive at my destination, I don't have my friends pick me up at arrivals. That's a refugee center. That is terrible. And that's where all the cops are with the screaming guard dogs. No, I go to departures because there's nobody there when I arrive. And all the police and the traffic cops are downstairs. My friends pick me up and off I go. And because I didn't have to wait for bags for 45 minutes to an hour, I beat a lot of traffic. And because I did FedEx my bags, which, by the way, you can also do with UPS and about 15 other services, guess where my bags are? They're in my room where I'm supposed to be anywhere. So whether this is the holiday season or any other time of the year, but especially this weekend, this is the time to be a contrarian traveler, and don't obey any single airport sign, and that includes the departures board. That hasn't told the truth since 1933. The departure boards only are useful for one reason and one reason alone, to tell you the gate that you were supposed to leave from. Now, what you do is you go to the airport, you look at that departure board, and let's say you're on flight 105, and it says leaving at gate 5, and of course they lie and say it's on time. So all you do at that point is go immediately to the arrivals board to see what is arriving at gate 5. And if nothing is arriving at gate 5 until next Wednesday, then why would you go all the way out to gate 5 to be disappointed that you're not leaving? You already know you're not leaving. All right, if I made myself clear, you got it? All right. So get to the website, sign up to be an insider, and we'll give you a lot more where that came from. When we come back, we're going to find out what's going on in terms of air safety. And pilots, stuff you need to know, not just on this weekend, on any weekend. Back from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-887-3837. 88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We will solve it right here on the air. A subject that is near and dear to me ever since I became a journalist is aviation safety. And there's so many different component parts to that. And one of them, of course, other than just the actual safety of the planes themselves, is the qualifications and the awareness and the training of the crew. And many of you may remember, going back to 2009, that terrible crash of the Colgan Air flight near Buffalo, New York, where as we began to investigate this and as the NTSB started revealing everything from the cockpit voice recorder situation to the history of the pilots themselves and the training procedures of their company, which was Colgan Air, even though it flew with a Continental logo on the tail and it was sold as a Continental co-chair flight, we began to learn a lot of different things that were very troubling about the actual training and qualifications of those two pilots. The co-pilot really wasn't qualified at all to fly in those conditions, and the pilot who'd been trained for those conditions had failed a number of tests, and when confronted with a situation that he did the exact wrong thing. He pulled up when he should have put the nose down, and that compounded the issue, and everybody died, including one person on the ground. And as a result of that, after hearings at the NTSB, and there are now hearings at the FAA, about increasing minimum hours of training for pilots to be able to sit in either the left or right seat, and of course one other issue which came up in the Colgan Air crash, and that is pilot fatigue. In that situation, the co-pilot was earning the average annual salary of a greeter at Walmart, a young woman who couldn't afford to live at the base where she was flying from. So actually, on the day that she was flying, she had to take a red-eye flight, jump seating on a FedEx plane to go from Seattle all the way back to New York just to be able to take her flight. And the question is, did she have enough rest? Despite the fact she wasn't properly trained, she wasn't aware of a lot of things because she was tired. Joining me now, who has a lot to say about this, the CEO of Citation Air, Bill Schultz. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
All right. Anything I say you disagree with?
No, I think you summarized it very well.
So now, you know, we have a situation here in the airline business where you have different certifications between commercially scheduled flights of a certain kind of plane and charter flights and private air. They come under different parts of the FAA rules. And there's a lot of confusion out there about the new regulations that the FAA is proposing. Why don't you run them through for me?
Well, the proposed rules are really trying to focus on the fact that fatigue affects the crew members in ways that sometimes can be insidious, and that the sleep deprivation as a result of schedule changes, flying across the United States through different time zones, the work load itself really has a direct impact on the pilot's ability to execute his or her responsibilities. So the new regulations are really trying to be really comprehensive and use the science that has been developed over the last couple of years to translate into good regulations that will result in good operating practices.
Well, let's go through a couple of those, for example. For example, I know a lot of pilots who complain to me that, you know, and these are some of the junior pilots who, you know, are flying three and four and sometimes five legs a day, and they're overnighting and have to turn around 8 hours later, and it's a question of block time. Why don't you talk about what block time is? Because that's a little confusing.
Well, block time technically is the time that the airplane leaves the gate until the airplane gets back to the gate. I think what's really a bigger driver in that is how much time is spent at the airport, or should I say it a little bit differently, how much time is not spent asleep, resting.
Right, because when the pilots land, all of a sudden the clock starts and they got an 8-hour turnaround. Well, wait a minute, it's going to take them 35 or 40 minutes to get to their hotel or leave the airport, another 20 minutes to get to the hotel. So they're not dealing with 8 hours of rest. They might be dealing with 5.5.
That can be true, yes. And the new regulations are really trying to capture some of that by trying to really understand some of the risk factors that are there, and time awake and time on duty are some of those risk factors. And quite frankly, if you're sitting in that taxi cab trying to get back to the hotel, some would argue that you're really not resting. And so some of the regulations are trying to anticipate some of the real-world situations that pilots, you know, face when they're exercising their privileges.
Well, Bill, this would seem to me like a no-brainer. Let's re-regulate and revise, if you will, those duty times and those turnaround times to be more realistic and more humane to the actual real-world conditions that the pilots go through. Why would somebody be opposed to that?
Well, I mean, clearly, if you know, there's an impact to every new regulation or every constraint that you put onto the schedules. And so it's not just a matter of trying to understand the financial impact, but trying to really understand the full impact of what each of the regulations represent. And so, you know, we have levels of expectations with respect to how many hours pilots will be available to work. That translates out into a schedule, which then translates into staffing levels that the air carrier has to plan for.
Well, sure, you know, and there's a big disparity between what the FAA says it's going to cost the airlines to implement these rules and what the airline association is claiming it's going to cost them. The FAA says it's going to cost the airlines about $1.25 billion over the next 10 years by revising these work rules. And the Air Transport Association, representing the major airlines, is saying, no, it's going to cost $20 billion. What do you think?
Well, I'm not really sure about what the specific numbers are, but I know, for example, at Citation Air, that some of the core values of our culture here is that safety has to be number one. It has to be our top priority. And we recognize that that comes at a cost. And so, you know, the cost of having an accident such as the Colgan crash, you just can't measure that. And so we work very hard to try to strike that balance between providing the resources to make sure that we do have a good, safe operation. And we weigh that against the financial requirements of our business as well. And striking that balance is what's really essential.
Let me tell you the issue that I have when it comes to air safety, and that is I think the NTSB does a great job under usually very terrible conditions in trying to figure out, to be really the crash detectives, if you will, to find out the probable cause of a crash. And they do such great work, and then when they come up with a probable cause, they then make recommendations. And the recommendations sometimes take on the role of a certain urgency because when they find out what caused the crash and they know that it could cause more crashes and they have a solution that's implementable, if that's a correct use of the English language, they make an urgent recommendation and then the FAA has to then make policy and rules and the FAA sits around and basically waits and waits and waits and waits. And I think that's wrong. Here's what I say. If you know there's a problem and you don't know what happened, that's fair. Now you find out what the problem is. That's good news. And then you find out what the solution is, and then you find out you can implement that solution, meaning that the technology or the hardware is available, and then you consciously choose not to implement that. In any other court of law in the world, that constitutes criminal negligence, don't you think?
Well, I'm not really an expert in what constitutes negligence or not. But
let me help you out on that one. Let me help you out on that one.
Okay.
If you know there's a problem and you choose not to solve it and people's lives are at stake, that constitutes criminal negligence. Ask the guys at Pinto with their gas tank.
Well, you know, there's nothing that prevents an operator from getting ahead of the regulations. And in all fairness, the regulations are really the minimum standard. So, for example, at Citation Air, yes, we need to meet the minimum standard, but we then need to look at our operation and how we conduct ourselves. And we don't hold ourselves to the minimum standard. We hold ourselves to a standard that's going to deliver a safe operation. So while the regulations may have been out there pending and you know, there's been some disagreement whether they've gone too far or not far enough, it didn't prevent an operator like Citation Air to say, there are certain items in these proposed rules and regulations that are really are good, and it's a clear path to a safer operation.
And you know,
so
we adopted some
of those.
And that's the cool thing. When you go over and above the minimums, that's when you deserve to be celebrated. So congratulations. I love that.
Well, thank you very much.
I appreciate that. That's when somebody tells you they've met the minimums, they get no kudos from me. When they exceed the minimums, now we got something to talk about. Bill Schultz, the CEO of Citation Air, thanks for joining us. And a little bit later in the show, we'll be joined by the guys who are your air traffic controllers, because they got something to weigh in on this as well. When we come back, more from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after these messages.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now. So call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
33 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. Peter Greenberg taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you email me at peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem. We'll solve it right here on the air. Speaking of taking phone calls, I'm looking forward to this one because when we talk about the legend and the history of the La Quinta Resort in this region, and we mentioned the name Frank Capra earlier. Of course, I was hanging out in his suite a little bit earlier, and legend has it he wrote everything there, including, and you know, you can't talk about Thanksgiving or Christmas without this movie, and I watch it every year, and I cry every year, and you know the movie. You have to know the movie. It's A Wonderful Life. And joining me now, someone who is in that movie, someone who played the role of Zuzu Bailey. And if you don't know who that is, you know what she said at the end of the movie. I'm going to have her say it right now. Her name is Carolyn Grimes. Hey, Carolyn.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm very good. I'm looking forward to coming down there.
Yeah, you have to. They're having a wonderful party at this hotel, which is really celebrating a whole Hollywood tradition. But here's my question for you. Would you just give me the line, please?
Daddy, Peter says, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings.
Your voice hasn't changed. Your voice hasn't changed. I love it.
Good.
Unbelievable.
I'm just that little girl.
You were only, what, 4 years old when that happened?
No, I was six.
Oh, excuse me, but who's counting?
Yeah, right.
do you remember any of that?
Oh, I remember all of it. It was a blast. We really had a good time. You know, no one knew that movie was going to be what it was and what it has become. But
I know. I mean,
at the time, it was just a job. But it was fun because there were other kids. And, of course, you know, I'm from Hollywood and it never snowed. And so I got to play in all this great snow, even though it wasn't real. I just really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, when I take a look at the cast of that movie, when you think of everybody who's in that movie, Donna Reed and Jimmy Stewart and Ward Bond.
Oh, yes.
Ward Bond is
Frank
the police
Phelan.
Officer.
I mean, it just goes down H.B. Warner, Lionel Barrymore. I mean, you know, these people were the concrete beginning of a period of golden era of films.
True. And, I mean, When you think, and then you went on to work with Cary Grant and with John Wayne. What did you do with Cary Grant?
The Bishop's Wife.
Wow.
And he was just a blast to play with. He ice skated, pulled me around on a sled, and he told me stories and read me books. He was just great. I really enjoyed working with him.
Now, and John Wayne, of course, nobody ever called him John Wayne. They called him Mr. Wayne, didn't they?
Yes, they did. But he called me Little Miss Carolyn.
and what did you do with Mr. Wayne?
You know, I had a birthday while we were filming that movie, and we were filming in Moab, Utah. I turned 10, and it was when the Korean conflict broke out, and they kind of commandeered some of the aircrafts, the government did, so it became difficult to get some of our supplies shipped in. And my birthday just happens to be the 4th of July, and Mr. Wang got $300 worth of fireworks shipped in. I mean, it was great. And he had a big cake made, and we went out on the Colorado River Bluff, and we had a big old birthday party for Little Miss Carolyn.
But you know what? No matter what you did, it was working with George Bailey, ranked as one of the top 50 heroes of all time in movies, and that's what they're doing here at the hotel this week. They're having a salute to Frank Capra. Of course, it's A Wonderful Life right here at La Quinta, and you're coming down for it. I mean, do you watch the movie every year like I do?
Oh, I watch the movie.
Don't tell me you watch it every day. Don't tell me you watch it every day. Please don't do that.
Oh, I do. I have to because I introduce the movie to the fans who watch it, and then I like to sit and watch it with them and hear their reactions. And, you know, I love doing that because it's so much a part of my life. It has become... You know, I'm talking about 6 minutes of film footage here. and I have a second career.
Yes, you do. I love
from
it.
From that little bit.
I know.
And that will go on forever. That movie is never going to go away because so many people have used this as their Christmas celebration, their Thanksgiving celebrations. I mean, the movie is just a part of Americana, and it's our roots. It's our basis. It's timeless.
And you know what it
yesterday,
is?
Yesterday, it's today and tomorrow.
It is. And if you take a look at the quintessential movie that has a quintessential happy ending, you could not have a movie in the history of movie making that didn't that had a happier ending than It's a Wonderful Life.
That's true. But you know what? Mr. Capra was a genius. He left it up to us to figure out that George Bailey was really the richest man in town. Because Potter never got punished. He never got caught. And that was kind of an unusual in those days. Usually, you know, good was rewarded and evil was punished. So I
think you're right. Mr. Potter never got punished. Okay, I'm writing a letter. I am writing a letter. Carolyn Grimes, it was a pleasure to talk to you. And have fun this weekend because I'm telling you, it is a wonderful life. And you've had one, too. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate that. Oh, boy. An angel gets its wings. What a pleasure. When we come back, we're going back to air safety. How about that? And we got to deal with more than just angels. Back with more from La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. Peter Greenberg here, back right after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is brought to you by
Travel Guard. Visit travelguard.com/unlucky. Tell us what makes you the world's unluckiest traveler, and you could win a $10,000 dream vacation. Brought to you by Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
It's 43 minutes after the hour. Peter Greenberg coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, and taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. Of course, this is Thanksgiving weekend, and while they're having a wonderful tribute to Frank Capra here at the resort, where are you? Are you stuck at the airport? Are you stuck at the mall? Are you actually stuck in a holding pattern over the mall? There may be some good news, because during peak travel periods, every once in a while, the Department of Defense actually releases airspace, and they're going to do that off the East Coast above 24,000 feet. It happened a couple of times before under President Bush. They're doing it again this weekend. It raises the question of air traffic control in general, and my next guest knows a lot about that. He and I have talked before on a couple of specials we've done for CBS. His name is Paul Rinaldi. He's the president of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association, otherwise known as NATCA. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Good. I want to go back to a conversation you and I had about a year ago in the wake of the Colgan air crash and all the things that came out of that. None of it to do with air traffic control, but it had to do with the general system in which we fly these days. Oh, you got a dog barking back there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
All right. Well, you know, you're a controller. Control your dog.
Absolutely.
Bottom line is, you know, you go back to 1981 when Ronald Reagan basically fired all the air traffic controllers because of a union action. He then replaced them. And everybody thought, okay, well, everything's hunky-dory, everything's great, but your staffing levels right now in the year 2010 going into 2011 are not where they should be, are they?
They are not. Our staffing levels have not really caught up since the imposed work rules of 2006. We're working towards them, and we are getting better, but as of right now, we have far too few fully certified controllers in the system compared to the ones that have to be trained to get to that fully certified level.
And to put things in proper perspective, I don't really think a number of people know how long it takes for somebody to be properly trained before you ever let them even sit with somebody else in front of a board, let alone sit alone.
Yeah, the average at the busiest facilities in the country takes 3 to 5 years of full-time, on-the-job training, position to position, and then once they're certified, a seasoning period for them to work on their own, and it's a 3 to 5 year full-time training position.
So what that really means, Paul, if you do the math, is in a 20-year career, that means 25% of your career is spent training.
Yes, and if you move from facility to facility, although when you move from facility to facility and you have the basis of air traffic control down and you have those skills and you're able to develop them at different levels, then it is less training. But your initial training at the busiest facilities, the in-route centers across the country, the large TRACOMs across the country, it is a 3 to 5 year process.
All right, so here's my crazy question, and it goes back to something you said to me on camera. And that is, there's a push to put people behind those consoles when they're not really ready yet. Do you remember
what
you said?
Because of the shortage in staffing, there certainly was. Fortunately, now we're working very collaboratively with the FAA administrator now and the FAA to address some training issues and some deficiencies, to revamp the training program, to make sure that the developmentals, that's what we call a controller in training, developmentals, have every opportunity to be successful and the tools and the knowledge that they need to do the job day in and day out. Now, that takes a little bit more time. It takes more tedious on the training and a little bit more extra time on those positions and in the classroom. But when safety is first and foremost, and it certainly is with the air traffic controls in this country, and it is with the Randy Babbitt administration and with Barack Obama, then we work together, we develop a good training curriculum, and we get the best product we can for the American public.
And, Paul, would you say that it's a help to you that Randy Babbitt, who's the head guy at the FAA, is also a pilot, so he understands more?
It is a big help that Randy's been on both on the pilot side of the frequency. It's also a help that he understands the value of the worker. We've had some pilots that have acted as FAA administrators. I really didn't understand the value of the air traffic controllers and the worker, and they just thought that anybody could do the job, and that clearly is the wrong assumption.
Randy values
his employees, and he really takes time to get to know them. He's visited facilities. He sat down and had some brown bag lunch, he calls them, where he sits down and talks about the concerns and the staffing and the training and the equipment. He really is a breath of fresh air when it comes to FAA administrators.
Well, Paul, I'm happy to hear that for a change. And you know what? That means you're not going to have to talk again. I want to monitor the situation. And let's hope that 2011 is even better for you guys. Because if it's better for you guys, it's better for us guys who fly. Paul Rinaldi from NACA. Thank you, man. And when we come back, more of the Frank Capra Celebration.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. Now back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. And having a great weekend here. I hope you are wherever you are. And you better not be at an airport, because I told you not to fly this weekend. But, I can't tell you everything. But this weekend here at the La Quinta Resort, they're having a great celebration of the work of Frank Capra. Of course, surrounding the movie It's a Wonderful Life, but there are so many other movies that he was responsible for. And joining me now is somebody who I think has a little bit to bring to the party. It's Frank Capra III, his grandson. Hey, Frank.
How are you, Peter?
I'm great. I mean, so much history, right? I mean, when Carolyn Grimes was on, you heard her. I mean, her voice, the exact same voice.
Yeah, pretty spectacular, wouldn't you? When you think about the time that's gone by since this picture was obviously my grandfather directed.
What year?
It's in 1946.
Right.
Right after World War II.
And as I say, timing is everything, because people really wanted a happy ending, and they needed one in 1946.
Yeah, and you know, it's very funny for him. You know, he had always come down here to the La Quinta Hotel, where I obviously have grown up and spent a large part of my life growing up down here. And from him writing it, it happened one night. He always considered this, you know, his lucky jewel in the desert, so continually came back and wrote pictures from It Happened, from You Can't Take It With You, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But growing up, he always said that It's a Wonderful Life was his favorite picture of all the pictures he directed.
Now, I know that you've had a long time of collaboration with Rob Reiner.
Yes, about 15 years.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, I grew up with him.
Well, that I did not know.
Fire Island in New York.
Oh, yes.
With his father, Carl.
And
Mel Brooks.
And Estelle. And,
right, and the original 2,000-year-old man was recorded out there.
Oh, that's right. I realize that.
And but the best part of your resume, you buried the lead. What movie did you work on that's like all-time favorite movie? My Cousin Vinny.
Someone gave it away, so I'm going to say My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. Two Utes.
Yeah, right? Yeah, which was, it goes to show you that still in Hollywood and in filmmaking that movies really truly do come from, you know, the origin of writing with the pen and the paper. And
it all starts with a pen. Yeah.
And it really starts there. And to develop a good story, it really has to come together that way. And then there's so many other, you know, factors that are involved, obviously, from casting and directing.
But, you know, it's so much of movie making, and I had a stint for a long period of time, actually, both at Paramount Pictures and at MGM myself, but so much of movie making today is about the package, and it's not about the writing. And when a movie becomes successful, it's almost a chemical accident. But
right.
if it's not in the writing to begin with, you don't have a lot to work with.
Well, it's funny. It's not that I publicly would say this a lot, but my grandfather always said, don't ever start a movie until you finish the script. But
don't tell that to the guys at Casablanca.
Correct, right?
Right? They knew what happened, right.
Exactly. But I've always felt that way, and, you know, that's one reason why I have had a long collaboration with someone like Rob Reiner, who truly does believe in creating the story and bringing the story to where it needs to be before you start to visually photograph the story. You know, I've been very fortunate with him. He's, you know, directed quite a few good pictures, from, you know, American President to The Bucket List to A Few Good Men and Harry Met Sally and Stand By Me. And
of course.
So, but
when we talk about your grandfather, I mean, I hate to use the word old school. I mean, I just was in the suite there, and, you know, there's the manual typewriter, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's the way it was. And by the way, when was the last time you actually tried to type on a manual typewriter? You hurt yourself.
Exactly.
You actually hurt yourself when you hit those keys.
How did you make movies before cell phones?
You want to tell me that?
Computers, right?
I know.
So I'm asked that all the time, of course. But, you know, for me, it's always a special place to come back down here. And there's so much history involved with the La Quinta, you know, resort and with my grandfather, Frank Capra. It truly is a special place. And it's quite
wonderful. What's the one, other than him telling you, don't start the movie till you finish the script, what's the other lesson he taught you?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time with my grandfather, being the oldest grandchild out of 10. Was very close to my grandfather up until when my grandmother and him passed away in the early 90s. He basically, what I learned from his exuberant and he was so full of joy and life. And I always smiling, always, there was no real negativity or any cynical characteristics that I ever really saw in him growing up. And the one thing that I really learned from him, which it's not that he preached it, but he made it very clear that you have to be bold and take chances and don't take anything for granted. Sometimes you'll win, sometimes you lose, but you have to take a chance in life.
You know what? What a perfect way to end this particular hour. Take a chance. Don't be fear-based. Frank Capra III, thank you for joining us on this celebration of Frank Capra. That music means we're out of time for this hour. For those stations leaving us, have a great rest of your week. And for those stations having the boldness to stick around, we'll be back with another hour from Peter Greenberg Worldwide at the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after these messages.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com. Live from around the world, it's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one frontline travel news journalist.
Around the world, the trip begins.
Get on the phone now and call 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, the travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Welcome aboard Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend wherever you happen to be. And it better not be at the mall, and it better not be at the airport, or I will personally come and slap you for being stupid. Anyway, we're taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you can always email me at peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question, or problem so we can solve it right here on the air. Lots of stuff to talk about this week. Of course, the TSA and the new scanning machines and the new pat-down procedures. Are you bored of it already? Or are you so lonely you want to get patted down? Which one is it? We can start an entire new dating service of people who just have no planes to catch, nowhere to go. They just come up with tickets. They just want to get the pat down. You know, we can start whole new relationships that way. Anyway, in all seriousness, this issue is not going to go away anytime soon. The TSA does have a public relations disaster on their hands. They're trying to back down from a lot of their original procedures, so they can't back down from it totally. You do have the right, by the way, not to go through those scanning machines. You do have the right to opt out and get the pat down, and you have the right to do it in a private room and with a witness of your choice. This is all new stuff. Pretty soon they're going to cater it, but we'll find out about that later on. Anyway, we will be monitoring the situation for quite some time. As I said before, it's not going away. One other item I want to mention to you on December 7th, it's coming up. It's Cancer Survivor Beauty Day. I say this with a certain degree of pride because back when I was on the Today Show, we spoke about it. We told people about it, and it's gone from one spa to over 65 spas involved in just Macy's alone. Spas in all 50 states are now involved, more than 500 in total. And this annual event's been going on since 2003. It's created by an amazing woman named Barbara Padgett after she was inspired by a segment I did. Oh, my God. How about that for self-serving? On a salon in Southern California that offered services to cancer survivors. And what happens is it's a purely volunteer event where the spas volunteer to provide services to cancer patients at many different locations and at reasonable times and, of course, at no cost. So check it out in your neighborhood or go to Macy's or go to our website where we'll have all that information on it for you, because cancer is a disease that if it doesn't touch you directly, it has touched you with a loved one or a family member. And if we're all going to be good cancer survivors and support them, you know what? Give them a little day at the spa. Why not? They deserve it based on what they've gone through. In any case, we're coming to you from, speaking of a day at the spa, a big celebration here at the La Quinta Resort, celebrating It's a Wonderful Life throughout the holidays. And what better time to watch that movie? And I admit it, I watch it every year, and I cry, not once, but many times during the movie. Okay, I'm a sentimental slob. Take me away. Put me out of my misery. But you got to love the movie. And you know what? We all love happy endings, and this one's got the best. So come down here and check it out, or Netflix time. You don't even have to Netflix that movie, because every channel in America is running that movie at some time between now and New Year's Eve. At least once a day, you'll be able to find that movie. If you check your DVR for the list, it'll be there. Joining me now, the person who runs our website, petergreenberg.com, and a regular on our show, of course, Sarika Shala. Hey, Sarika.
Hello, Peter.
So what you got for us this week on the website, this Thanksgiving weekend of security pat-downs and screenings?
Well, we have some information on security pat-downs and screenings.
Unbelievable. Yes.
Yeah, so, well, I chose not to go through all that. I'm staying right here in California because it's safer here. I'm not going through it.
You're not.
I just don't want to. I couldn't deal with the Wednesday, the Thursday. I'm following your advice. But for those who didn't, we have all the information they need to know about holiday travel. When they're heading back tomorrow, they need to know that there's probably going to be delays at the airport, so get there early.
Weather not even permitting. It has nothing to do with weather. It's just basic operational delays based on the long lines at the airport.
It's just a lot of people. We also have some great video from Peter Greenberg.
Who?
Not that guy.
Oh, yeah.
So if you sign up to be an insider, we actually have some exclusive videos that are kind of behind the scenes. And so that's where people can get information straight from you about those pat-downs, about the full-body scanners, about what it means.
Yes, I'm actually totally naked in the videos with rubber gloves. No, I'm not.
Whatever works.
Okay. And that's pretty exclusive, by the way.
And for everyone else, we also have some great information. You know the term Black Friday. We just passed that. Well, now there's Cyber Monday, which has to do with online shopping. That's when people, again, skip the line, skip the crowds, just start shopping on Monday for their holiday presents. Now the travel industry has gotten involved. They're offering their discounts and deals on that Monday alone.
Well, remember, there's another reason why they're offering those discounts and deals on this coming Monday, and that's because it's the dead week. Mm-hmm. It's the week immediately following Thanksgiving. There are two dead weeks a year. It's the one immediately following Thanksgiving and the one immediately following New Year's, because no one's traveling. You know, everybody's just recovering from that dysfunctional family get-together known as Thanksgiving, and they're recovering from drinking too much over New Year's. So if you're looking for deals, Cyber Monday or not, you will find them out there this coming Monday for the first week after Thanksgiving, and, of course, the week after January 3rd, you'll see it all over the place.
And what a lot of them are doing is they are opening that window of, you know, maybe 12-hour period on Monday where you can find deals that actually last well into January, February, March. They'll have blackout dates, of course, for the holidays. But, yeah, there's some incredible deals. We've got, you know, discounts on cruises and airlines and hotels and resorts.
By the way, we saw one that crossed my desk earlier this week, a 7-night cruise in the Caribbean for $299.
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah. Now, let's do the math. That's about $45 a night. You can't wake up in Cleveland for $45 a night, because that includes your three meals. So if you're really smart, I've been telling people this for years, lease out your apartment, move out of Cleveland, move onto the ship for $299 a week, including your three meals, you're going to make money.
And entertainment free.
And free entertainment. Yeah. Just, you know, watch the booze.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that'll get you. Yeah, I think MSC has a deal just about that. It's about $239, $299 for 7 nights in the Caribbean.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? It makes a lot of sense.
I would do it.
But remember, everything on a cruise ship, like an airline these days, and a hotel, is a profit center. It's ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching if you want to do the rock climbing wall, or the casino, or the spa, or the signature restaurants, or the shore excursions, or the art gallery, mm-hmm. or the Photoshop, or it's all there. So budget accordingly. It's never going to be $299 by the time you add it up. But I actually met some people last year who spent about $300 for the week, and brought, you know, all they did was drink water and had their three meals a day in the main dining room, and they did their own shore excursions by walking around the ports where they stopped. And you know what? They had a great time.
Yeah.
They saved money, and they got to see the same entertainment that everybody else on the ship saw.
See, that's smart cruising. That's the way to do it. So, and if you plan right, if you find out when the deals are happening, then you can jump on them and get some great savings.
And what would be a good resource for that?
It's called PeterGreenberg.com, if you've heard of that guy.
Wow. And how did you come up with the name of that website?
Oh, I'm good. I'm a professional.
Do we hire a consultant for this?
Yeah, no. Teams came up with this.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, conference calls.
Yeah, it's the American way. Hire consultants. All right. Sarah Gershaler, our managing editor for PeterGreenberg.com. And by the way, in all seriousness, we update this every 18 hours. You need to look at this website because it's news you can use. It's not transactional. We're not selling you anything. We're giving you information. And speaking about information, our next guest is loaded with it. He's the editor-in-chief of National Geographic Traveler magazine, a good buddy of ours, Keith Fellows, out with a new book, 500 of the World's Most Spectacular Trips. Ow! Right, we're back when we come back from La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. Back right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-887-3837. That's 1-888-88-PETER. Got a travel question or comment? Need advice? Jump on board now by calling the show at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. Once again, here's your host, Peter Greenberg.
18 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, taking your calls at 888-887-3837. That's 888-88-PETER. If you can't get through on the phones, you know the drill, boys and girls. Email me to peter@petergreenberg.com with your name, phone number, question or problem, and this being Thanksgiving weekend, there's a good chance you're probably listening to the show, stuck in your car, stuck on the road, stuck at a mall, wondering why you even got in your car, which is a perfect segue to my next guest because he has a great new book out called Drives of a Lifetime, Going to the Mall Not Being One of Them, 500 of the World's Most Spectacular Trips. And his name, from National Geographic Traveler, Keith Fellows. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I mean, great idea for a book, because if there's ever a time to get behind the wheel of a car and go somewhere, now would be that time.
Yeah, right in your driveway, right? it's the time of year, maybe not the perfect weekend for driving, but it depends on where you go. You know, I mean, you went to University of Wisconsin, right? You're a Badger?
At a Proud Badger.
Yeah, I think so. So you could be up there in the north woods of Wisconsin, you know, trolling around Lake Superior, South Shore. And, you know, I know you have the National Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame up there, but you also have the Wisconsin Concrete Park. I guess you've seen that, right? 250 life-size concrete figures. probably more exotic drives we could direct you to, but I just was so struck by your own backyard.
Okay, so you had to start with Wisconsin, but you have 499 more, don't you?
You do. We do, yes.
And putting together this book, Keith, I mean, I guess the real question is, how do you sift and winnow? How do you narrow it down? Because it's a big, bad world out there, and some of these drives are thrill-seeking in nature. Some of these drives are much more leisurely in nature. Some of these drives have great scenic beauty, and some of these drives actually just get you to someplace else.
Yeah, but mostly you don't want to get straight from A to Z. And the thing is, we actually had 70, somewhere in the approximate zone of 7,500 drives. We put the casting call out to, you know, all our folks around the world, the writers, the photographers, the global explorers, et cetera. We got some of the wildest drives in the world and some of the most sedate drives. And so we look for balance. I mean, we wanted foodie drives. We wanted those gentle drives through the bucolic landscape. We wanted the classic drives like Big Sur, the, you know, down Highway 1, which, you know, every driver has to do, hopefully with a top down. And it's a matter of balance, and we made the cut. It means we have four or five more books to come.
Of course you do. Well, let's start with the ones that made this book. I mean, you can drive through a rainforest.
You can drive through a rainforest. And by the way, let's define drive, because it doesn't necessarily have to be car. It can be tuk-tuk. It can be bus. It can be bicycle. You can drive down Fifth Avenue. But, yes, you can drive through the rainforest. You can drive the Black Hills. You know, you can do the leaf-peeping drive through Vermont, the Green River Mountains. Napa Valley, you can do the wine drive. Of course, if you want to sample the wines, you want to be the passenger. On and on and on. I mean, there's so many ways to look at the driving experience. And you know, one of the great things is that I think each of us have their own driving IQ. I mean, I love to get lost. It's just something I like to do. So I start with a basic drive. You know, I know kind of roughly where I'm going to end up, but it may take me a whole lot longer than I think to get there. And my mom said, you know, if you come to a fork in the road, take it. You know, you won't be disappointed.
I thought Yogi Berra said that.
No, my mom said that. Yogi Berra may have said it on the baseball field, but my mom said it in the car.
All right. Well, speaking about that fork in the road, I mean, you know, when you talk to people, if they're being honest with you, especially the people who love to be, you know, who love to plan their drives, what they'll tell you is the best experiences they ever had were when the plan didn't work, and when they did take a left turn instead of taking a right turn.
I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, it happened on a trip that you and I took to Jordan. We went out on a Jeep, and you weren't there, but we went out in a Jeep in Wadi Rum, and we ended up coming home on a camel. So, you know, these things happen, and that's the great adventure of travel.
And let me just say, Keith, I'm glad I wasn't there because camels are angry, mean animals that spit.
And they acted accordingly, yep.
Thank you. So I'm sorry I wasn't with you. Not. But bottom line here is when we talk about, you know, drives of a lifetime, let's talk about some of the thrill-seeking drives. I mean, those roads in Bolivia.
The roads in Bolivia or in Peru. I mean, these are cliffhangers, and you quite literally. I was on one last year, going to a place called Cuila, 15 hours, you know, over the Andes, in the fog, trucks going both ways, you know, hair-raising drops on both sides. Those are the kind of drives you love having completed, but you're terrified all the way.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, similar kinds of drives where if you're doing, you know, you're in the Okavango Delta or Serengeti Safari, I mean, you're in the hands of a good driver, experienced driver, an armed driver. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to get charged by an elephant, which has happened, or you're not going to get bogged down in the mud, which has happened. So maybe I'm actually convincing people that they want to stay home and drive just around the neighborhood and go to the mall.
No, you see, the beautiful thing about travel is when you get to recover from all that stuff.
Yeah, I totally agree, Peter. And you know, there are those bucolic drives. I mean, each of us has three, four favorite drives in them. And they're probably drives that we took when we were young. I mean, I remember my parents would always drive the 8 or 9 hours from Montreal, which is where I lived, to Cape Cod, in an old Rambler. And that was a drive that should have taken, you know, maybe 12, 15 hours. Usually took 3 days because we always slept 2 nights in a garage somewhere. But those are the things that shape your relationship with the road.
By the way, you just said something very interesting. I have to share it with the audience because many people may not even know what I'm talking about or what you talk about. You mentioned the word Rambler, as in Nash Rambler?
Yep, absolutely. Reconstituted Nash Rambler, I might say. but that was I'm not that old, but I mean, but that was my first experience, you know, doing the whole license plate thing, you know, counting blue cars, red cars. Realizing that the road was part of the journey, it wasn't just, you know, it was wonderful when you got there, but the trip itself, and there's always a detour, there's always a surprise. Those are the things that also make these drives great. So when you look at it like this, it's a celebration of the road. It's telling you great places to go to, but it's not saying you have to do it this way. It's saying just get out there.
And also, it may not just be the drive itself. As you said earlier, it might just be the vehicle. So in the Philippines, you want an adventure? Go on the jeepney. In Bangkok, you mentioned the word before, but I'll explain what it is. They're little iron death machines called the tuk-tuk. You just hold on for dear life. And as you say, when the ride is over, you go, wow, what a great ride. Oh, my God, I lived.
And, Peter, I just got back from Papua New Guinea, and we went on what should have been a one-hour ride up a hill to the Western Highlands. It took 4.5 hours, and I was with some people who were a little older, maybe not as traveled as I. And these poor people, I mean, we had them in blankets. We were giving them, you know, cold coffee the whole way up.
Wow. But you made it. So you survived.
Yeah, of course. And then they, of course, talked about it for the entire rest of the trip.
Okay. Now, here's my stupid question of the day. Is there a drive that you had that you would never want to do again?
Yes. It's the road from Agra to Jaipur with a friend of ours, a couple of friends of ours, and Rudy Maxson and a few others, and we got stopped in a riot, essentially. We were with Paul Theroux, and we decided to try to circumvent the crowd. It took us many, 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 many hours. We ended up going against the grain on a riverbed, of camels and elephants to get to our hotel. That is a drive I do not want to do again.
Right, but I'm sure you have photos.
Unfortunately, I don't.
Really?
Yeah, I was hanging on too hard. 13 people in a small Jeep. Not a fun thing to see.
I totally get it. The name of the book, Drives of a Lifetime, 500 of the world's most spectacular trips, except going against the grain against elephants and other people. Is that about it? And camels. And, of course, our friend Keith Bellows, the editor-in-chief of National Geographic Traveler magazine, always a great source of information and always a great source of good stories. And forgetting the traffic jam that you may be in today, the bottom line is you get out there, get out on the road, and it doesn't matter what the vehicle is. It matters what you experience along the way. Correct?
Absolutely.
All right.
And,
Keith Bellows,
go back to the Eastern Shore and go driving with me, Peter.
After that story, I'll be hanging on, all right?
Okay.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate that. And when we come back, a lot of history right here at La Quinta. It's being celebrated this weekend and all year long, but especially during this holiday season as they pay tribute to Frank Capra and a true golden age of Hollywood. Back with more of Peter Greenberg Worldwide from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California, right after these messages.
To participate in the program and speak with Peter Greenberg, call 1-888-887-3837 or visit petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Avis. Avis, we try harder.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
And welcome back to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Hope you're having a wonderful weekend wherever you happen to be. You know where we are? We're at the 33-minute mark here at the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. And when we talk about a legendary hotel, then it only goes to show you that, to prove the point, they have to have a historian. And they do. And her name is Dee Smith. Hey, Dee.
Hey, Peter.
I mean, here we are celebrating, essentially, It's a Wonderful Life, the tradition of Frank Capra, the golden age of Hollywood. And it really, truly was a golden age. I mean, when people, and we were talking to Frank Capra III earlier about his growing up here and about all the great stories that happened here.
Yes.
And even the fact that there are very, very few photos of the stars who were here because they really came here to hide out.
That's right.
I mean,
privacy.
I mean, and the way that the way the resort is laid out, you still have that today, don't you?
We do. 45 acres on property, but you can be secluded in any many different parts of the property.
Well, tell me about some of the legends who were here.
We've got a lot.
We got time. Go ahead.
First, starting with Frank Capra, most definitely. The most notable, we've also had President Eisenhower. His brother actually lived across the street at the La Quinta Country Club.
Well, you know, you walk around Palm Springs and La Quinta, there are, how many Eisenhower roads are
That's
there?
Right.
And medical centers and everything
That's
else.
That's right. Many president names for streets in our location.
That's right. So they all came out to play golf.
That's right. They all wanted to be out in the warm weather and golf and just get away. And, you know, we had Greta Garbo, who would come actually, as most people know, she was a pretty reclusive type person. So she really liked the serenity here, the quietness of the resort. And she could be left alone. If not, if she wanted to socialize, she certainly could. She actually would rent out La Casa, which is on the backside of our property. And she would lease that out with her boyfriend, John Gilbert, when she needed to get away.
And she didn't leave a lot. She hung in.
She hung in quite often.
That's right.
She did. They once in a while, they would. We had horseback riding stables on the property, and they would actually get on a horse and ride up to a wonderful little bench on the opposite side of the property just to watch the sunset.
Aw. Can we all say that?
Yeah.
Aw. I mean, yeah, Ginger Rogers.
Ginger Rogers.
Clark Gable.
Marlena Dietrich.
Wow.
Errol Flynn.
Okay, tell me the truth now, because you're the historian. You would know these things. Who is the wildest of them all?
Well, of course, Errol Flynn. I'm sure.
Well, his favorite four-letter word was next.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think everybody here was here just to have a good time, and it was the one place that they were far enough away from Hollywood and they could just enjoy themselves. So I think everybody, you know, had that opportunity if they wanted to.
In terms of the historical figures who stay here, who would be your biggest surprise that you go, I had no idea even they stayed here? Who would that be?
In most cases, the presidents. You know, I know that quite often celebrities come, but the presidents, many, many of presidents have come and stayed on property, you know, just to have a little time away as well. So that's probably the most notable people. That
now, I was over in the Capra Suite earlier, right, in the casita. It's a villa, or what do you,
it's a casita suite. Yes.
Excuse me. What I loved about it, wood-burning fireplace.
The original casitas, the original 20 casitas, have several really nice features, one of them being the wood-burning fireplace.
See, that I wouldn't leave the room anyway.
No, the bellman bring you.
Why would you want to leave if you have the wood-burning fireplace?
That's
you're in. You're
right.
In for the week.
And even have a nice little screened-in patio porch with a hanging swing. I mean, and no one around you because there's really not a pool area to that area. We keep it historical, and so it's very nice and quiet.
And speaking of historical, what about this resort during World War II?
It did close. You know, people weren't traveling. They weren't really, they were staying close to home. It was secluded, boarded up. General Patton did come and stay on property with fellow officers, and they could strategize about the war, but it was
They called it strategizing, didn't
yes.
they? They were drinking. What are you talking about?
And no one knew they were here.
Oh, top secret drinking.
Of course.
When did it reopen?
It reopened afterwards to a slow start, but then slowly the Hollywood community came back. And at that time, you know, we had several new owners throughout the years after that. So it just slowly came back. It was always a seasonal type resort. It would just be here during season, the summer months. Everybody would go home. The employees actually lived here on property.
In the summer?
In the winter.
In the winter.
During season.
Wow.
And they would stay back on the back portion of the property. They would be here 24 hours a day to assist the guests.
But, you know, I'm one of those people who, I'm a contrarian. I really believe in the off-season. I'm one of those guys, I'll go to Alaska in the winter and La Quinta in the summer. Now, granted, it gets a little hot. I know everybody says it's a dry heat. We won't go there. But you know what? If you want to have a great experience and not have to have stand in line and get great service, why wouldn't you go to the Caribbean in July as opposed to February?
I think our occupancy during the summer has exploded the past few summers because a lot of people aren't traveling because they don't want to get on the airlines quite as much. So they're staying local to us, and they're coming here. And, you know, we have air-conditioned rooms. You have air-conditioned.
You have that newfangled air conditioning?
Yes, and oh, not only God. That, we've got 41 swimming pools and 53 jacuzzis. So, I mean, you're pretty well taken care of in
all
that.
Right. You sold me. You Good? Sold me. Dee Smith, the resort historian, thank you so much.
Thank you very much,
and, I want to go back and find out what General Patton was really doing in the room.
I'd like to know myself.
You know, it's true, because when you think about it, that's what's classified as top secret, because it's called Top Scotch. That's what it was called. You know I'm right.
Yeah, of course I know you're right.
Because you're the historian.
That's right.
You found the bottles.
I did. Well, we've got them tucked away.
I bet you do. All right, we'll be back with more from the Quito Resort, where I'll be strategizing right back after this.
Call now to talk to Peter Greenberg at 1-888-887-3837 or email him at peter@petergreenberg.com. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
Travel Guard Insurance. For travel insurance plans for the unexpected, see your travel agent or visit TravelGuard.com for affordable travel insurance protection from Travel Guard.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
43 minutes after the hour, Peter Greenberg with you here from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. And this next subject is one that is near and dear to me because we forget all too often a certain percentage, and I'm going to give you that percentage. 19% of the American public has one form of physical disability or another, and I don't care about the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's nicely intentioned, but you know what? In many cases, that particular portion of the public has been disenfranchised in so many ways, and they vote with their wallets too, and they have every right to have an accessible, truly, literally accessible travel experience as the rest of us. And joining me now is someone who knows a lot about disability travel, Candy Harrington. Hey, Candy.
Hey, Peter.
In fact, you've written the classic Barrier-Free Travel and Nuts and Bolts Guide for Wheelers and Slow Walkers. And I'd almost want to put a comma after that and say, and everybody else.
Well, that's true, because you're just one step away from being disabled. You never know when you will be in a wheelchair or crutches or otherwise have an issue. You know, it's a lot of things can happen out there in the world.
You know, it's really, when it comes to the travel experience, doesn't it really just basically get down to some basic common sense in terms of design and function as opposed to style? I mean, have you checked into a hotel lately? Have I checked into a hotel lately where the counter is at wheelchair level for anybody? I haven't seen one.
Well, you know, you're right about that, the check-in counters. But some hotels actually go one step further. I know, for example, Microtel, they have specific designs with all their properties, and they do have a lowered counter as well as a higher counter for their guests, too.
You know what? And good for them. There's a hotel out in California, in Los Angeles, the old Holiday Inn Crown Plaza out by the airport. Before they built the hotel, they brought in five or six people who had mobility issues and said, before we build this hotel, tell us what you want and what you especially need in a hotel, and they built it. I mean, they have carpets that are wheelchair-friendly. They have doorknobs that are lower to the floor. They have the peepholes that are at wheelchair level. They have doors that are wide enough that don't have these big trussels that you can't get a wheelchair over. They have both audio and visual alarm systems for people with either sight or hearing impaired. I mean, they've really gone the extra mile there, and you know what? They get great kudos from me as well.
A lot of people in the tourism industry are actually moving from that mandate to marketing edge mindset. They know that people out there have money to travel. They have an aging baby boomer population. So they aren't making things accessible because of the law. They're making things accessible because they see a market for it.
Exactly. Well, you know, at a certain point, the market does speak, and I don't care how they get the wake-up call, as long as they do get the wake-up call. I'll give you one that really drives me nuts. You ready for this one?
Sure.
Okay. Every cruise line will tell you that they have made their ships ADA compliant, And most of the ships, if not all the ships that I've been on, can actually, you know, make that claim true. I mean, they've ramped the ship. If you're confined to a wheelchair or need one, you can get around. The doors are wide enough. There are not that many stairs. There are enough the elevators can hold you fine. And yet, if we're talking about 19% of the American public having some sort of a physical disability, why is it that only 6% of the cabins on the ships are accessible? And then, the wildest one of all, it's the ports. If the ports are inaccessible, you're trapped on the ship. And I think that every cruise line, in an ecumenical way, should hold a press conference tomorrow and say, effective immediately, we will not sail to the following 9 ports until they are made accessible to all of our passengers. And you know how fast they would fix those ports?
Yeah, yes and no, I think. I mean, it's a real struggle, especially with the Caribbean, because sometimes accessible transportation just doesn't exist down there. And when it does, on the smaller islands, if it breaks, it'll take a long time to get parts for maybe that one accessible van. So
I'm not talking about
case,
yeah, but you know what? I'm not talking about one van. I'm talking about enough vans.
Right, and there are small operators that are doing this. Large operators are not actually having accessible vehicles in some countries, and the small guys just can't afford it. You know.
Exactly. Well, listen, I support everything that you're doing. The name of course, your classic book is Barrier-Free Travel, A Nuts and Bolts Guide for Wheelers and Slow Walkers. You're also the founding editor of Emerging Horizons. And is there a website we should know about, Candy?
Well, you know, I blog about accessible travel issues at barrierfreetravels.com, and it's got connections and links to all the other resources for accessible travel, too.
Candy, thank you so much. Really appreciate the help, and we'll get you back on the show soon because I really want to target the areas where we can improve things, because when it gets improved, I'm a happier guy, and I know you're happier as well, because travel should be made available to all of us.
Oh,
Candy Harrison, you got it. Thanks again for joining us. When we come back, more from the locals. That's right. We got our Ask the Local segment coming right up, right after this.
The Peter Greenberg Worldwide phone lines are open now, so call us at 1-888-88-PETER. That's 1-888-887-3837. This segment of Peter Greenberg Worldwide is proudly brought to you by
MedJet Assist. If you're injured or hospitalized while traveling, MedJet Assist will arrange medical transportation directly to the hospital of your choice. Travel safely and be smart. Get MedJet Assist. Take trips, not chances.
Now back to Peter Greenberg.
52 minutes after the hour, coming to you from the La Quinta Resort in La Quinta, California. This is our segment called Ask the Locals, and you can't get more local than my next guest, because she's not just a retired educator and a community activist. She was married to the first mayor of La Quinta, Fred Wolf, and, of course, her name is Kay Wolf. Hey, Kay.
Hi.
And, you know, we're here celebrating It's a Wonderful Life, and essentially the golden age of Hollywood that happened, so much of it happened here, was created here. Were you involved in any of that? Did you see any of that?
Well, my husband started coming to the desert into the hotel at the end of the war, 1949, his father built a house here.
Which and is they, right about after this hotel was reopened.
Right. Yeah. And so he had been coming here. I didn't come here until 1975 or so, but it's always been a focal point, a watering hole for the locals. And it's always been something that we could hold up to the rest of the communities as sort of the star in our crown. We're called the city is called the Gem of the Desert, by the way. So we like to think of the hotel as being the largest gem.
And is it?
It is, certainly. And it it's interesting. When you think about the influence that the hotel has had over the community, of course you know that. It's La Quinta is only one of two communities to have been named after a hotel, La Quinta and the Beverly Hills Hotel. And so the next development that came into the area, because everything had been agriculture up to that time, and so the next big venture here after 1926 when this hotel was built was in the mid-30s, and they called it the Desert Club of La Quinta because they wanted to piggyback on the fame that the hotel already had. And so when they made a residential development, they called it La Quinta. So certainly the name, and when we incorporated, if it hadn't been for the bed tax at the hotel, we would never have had enough money to incorporate. So if it hadn't been for the hotel.
How many cities have followed in your footsteps? It's all about the occupancy tax.
That's what it is. That's what we all want is hotels. So we're fortunate to have such a wonderful hotel.
And let's not forget 25 golf courses.
Yes, and the owners of the hotel, you know, promoted golf. They promoted tennis. They've been big supporters of in the community, and they've just really helped shape to make this community what it is today.
What was the biggest surprise to you when you first moved here?
Well, I suppose you may have noticed our mountains. And I had never seen mountains with no trees. And I've had friends who've come here and said, it looks like you're on the moon because the mountains are rocky and very dramatic looking. And I was surprised at how much I disliked these mountains because I thought mountains had to have trees. But now I love the mountains because they pick up the hues of the sun and the shade and everything. So,
and, of course, you climb them every day, don't you?
I wish I could.
Have you ever climbed it?
I have. Well, our cove area is surrounded by mountains.
Sure.
And in my younger days, I did go up one of the peaks. So,
what's the biggest myth of La Quinta that you want to dispel right now?
Well, there's a myth about the name.
Okay, tell me.
Well, because in Spanish, Quinta can mean five, but actually the hotel and thus the city was named because Walter Morgan had vacationed in Mexico, and he knew what a quinta was down there, which was a country home, sort of a place to get away from the hubbub. And so he wanted to create something like that here, so he had his little country hideaway. And so I've spent all my life, most of it, trying to dispel the idea of how La Quinta was really named, because it was named after Frank Morgan's concept, his vision.
And here we are this weekend celebrating a lot of Hollywood history, too.
A lot of Hollywood history, yes. And this whole area.
How many times have you seen It's a Wonderful Life, the truth?
Well, probably not more than seven. But we always try to see it as often as we can. So, and, you know, the whole theme of It's a Wonderful Life, we like to think that we who live here and live in the aura of the hotel also have a wonderful life. So it's contagious.
Now, are you a year-round person here?
I am a desert rat year-round.
Really?
Yes, yes.
So you're not one of those, like, fair weather
No, no, no. I have to. You can't be a wimp to live here year-round, so.
And you're no wimp, K. Wolf.
Well, you get wimpier as you get older, but it's a great place to be year-round. In fact, my husband actually talked to the management here, was like to think he was influential in getting the hotel to stay open year-round, because his point was...
That was a challenge.
That was a challenge, because they always closed down, as we heard earlier, and he said, look, you've got to maintain the grounds. You can't let those golf courses, you know, go dry. There's a certain amount of expenses, and why not have some people here at good rates in the summer so that they can enjoy all those, and it won't be a losing proposition in the summer. So,
and of course, let's not forget that occupancy tax.
That's the occupancy tax.
I knew you were going to get back to that. Kay Wolf, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate
that. Thanks for the opportunity.
And a great weekend up ahead as well.
Thank you.
You got it. Time to say some thank yous, because we're just running out of time. We got to say, of course, hi to, and thanks to Jeff Ryder running the boards back east, to Damian Lotero, Damian, who did the boards right out here at La Quinta, to Sarah Gershala, our producer online here, of course, and our managing editor at petergreenberg.com, Shelley Goncharowski, our senior producer, Marguerite Clark, for reasons only she knows, and Sydney Moore, and all the people here from La Quinta for making this show possible. Have a great rest of your Thanksgiving weekend. Watch the pat-downs. Don't get in trouble. Smile at the TSA officers. The package you save may be your own.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Visit our website at www.petergreenberg.com.